Thank you for the support.
All right. I'll call this meeting to order, starting at 10:20. So in keeping consistent with open meeting laws, we can do a Pledge of Allegiance and National Anthem and the roll call. Let's first do roll call. So we have, Rebecca, if you want to go through the roll call.
Diane Bruning, Wisho is not attend, not present. Karen Plummer. Karine Plummer.
Corinne.
Yeah, and you know, would you mind as you go through the roll call, could you just tell, like, I'm a parent and Andrea's a parent, that it would be helpful for me, especially calling in, to know who else is there and what, you know, what they bring, you know, who they are, what they do in their regular lives, you know, so that we can draw on them as resources.
Okay. I don't have them. When I say the name, when I say your name, if you want to identify as to how you've been, how you relate to the council, then you can say so. So right now we have Corinne Plummer, and you said you were a parent, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then we have Kelly Anderson, who we show as not present, and Andrea Weck Robertson?
Parent.
And then we have Alicia Miller.
Present, and I am a school psychologist with the Florence Unified School District.
Okay, thank you. We'll quickly do the Pledge of Allegiance. The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic
for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, I'll briefly go over the mission statement, which really is the council, as the Annual Education Plan Development Council, is to develop the eligibility criteria to receive the Empowerment Scholarship account monies beyond 18 years of age. The council will also establish the minimum qualifications for the independent evaluation teams. The factors of the team must use to determine whether the qualified student shall be eligible to continue to receive the monies until the age of 18. The council will also develop a request for proposal to be approved by the State Board of Education and issued by the Department of Education for independent evaluation teams to conduct annual education plans. ADE is then required to include this list of qualified independent evaluation teams in the student's final year contract. The council will then review the department's policies concerning annual education plans as developed by the council, and then we will submit a report of its findings and recommendations to the governor, the president of the Senate, the speaker of the House of Representatives, and the superintendent of public instruction on or before December 31st. And that is the mission of this council and the actions that we must take in the next 2 months. With that said, both Christy and I and our teams are here to support the council. It is our mission to quickly make these decisions and make them in the best way possible for the students of Arizona. With that said, do any of the council members have any questions about what is being asked of this council?
No, thank you.
No.
Okay. Then I will hand it over to Christy to talk about the criteria and the minimum qualifications.
Okay. So the first thing that we need to look at is what is the criteria for a student who is 18 to 22 years of age that would allow them to remain eligible to receive an ESA. So what is it that will keep them on the program? What is it that we want to look at? And then that's where your expertise kind of comes into play as parents and school psychologists. What to Andrea's point, what is kind of the difference between that IEP and the MET? What is the difference between that current process to the AEP? Or is it any different?
Okay.
Do we want to utilize what's currently in place or come up with something different?
Okay.
I come at it from a different aspect of making it make sense and not wasting state monies and not wasting a lot of people's time. Of what do you need? I guess as the Department of Ed, what do you need to say that this child needs more education? What does that look like to you?
Honestly, that's the kind that's, of the purpose of the purpose. This is to okay. decide that. What does that look like?
Okay. Because a child, like my daughters are twins. What Charlie needs to graduate high school and what Lexi needs to graduate high school, they're not even on the same playing field. Mm-hmm. So I guess a disabled child is going to need it even past 22. So we have to make some type of criteria that makes sense for lower functioning, higher functioning. It's such a broad umbrella. Where do we even, you know, the MET report is something that they
did away with?
No, it's still okay.
And it's still utilized. The okay. MET report is every 3 years.
Okay.
And then the IEP is done annually.
Okay.
So you have kind of a plan for each year.
Okay. And so it was when I did my last MET report for Lexi when she was a freshman, they said, oh, well, she won't need another one, and that's because it went to 18. Okay. Is that why? That's I'm asking you. She said, oh, well, you won't need another MET report. The gal at the public school.
Well, because she is your student.
She was a freshman at the time when she got it.
And she was in the public school, or was she on the ESA?
She was in a private school. And so I'm guessing that's because at that time, because she's now a sophomore, they were thinking, oh, in 3 years she won't need it because she'll be exited.
Correct.
Okay.
That would be my understanding, but we can't speak to.
I have a different take on that. This is Corinne. My understanding is that the MET is waived after you get in. So somebody in second grade who qualifies through their MET for under the special education part of the ESA plan, they're not required to get another MET or IEP for the entire time that they are in ESA. Hmm. That has been waived.
Right,
that
is correct. So while they're receiving an ESA, they do not have to go back and get another IEP or an updated MET to remain eligible for the ESA until they're 18 years of age. And that's where this AEP comes into play. Because typically they would have exited, but now this AEP process allows them to stay on. But you are correct. During that time frame until they're 18, the IEP and the MET do not need to be updated.
Okay, that's where I was coming.
Right, but I guess because that's what happened to me is that originally I was told to stay in past the age of 18. I could submit another MET, but that never happened. That was just accident. My son was just accident. So if that's something that we could look at, then that would be a small population of children then that would be required to get another MET. To stay in, but the question is, what are you looking for on the MET? Is it the same thing that you were looking for when you came into the program, or is it something different to be able to stay past the age of 18? And I think that's what Andrea is asking. What do you need from the Department of Education perspective? What do they need for the kids to be able to stay in? Then they can figure out how to get that to you.
But the purpose of this council
is for,
or this, is for you to decide that.
Okay.
We need your help to determine what is it that we should be looking at to allow them to stay
is
on.
Is it called an AEP?
An AEP,
yes.
So AEP is the requirement, is it, and it's defined as an annual education plan means an initial individualized evaluation and subsequent annual reviews that are developed for a qualified student who meets the criteria specified in the...
I guess I've never heard it referred to as AEP.
Me neither. Right. AEP is a new term that was passed in SB 1457.
So that's our new term.
Yes.
That's what we're here to determine.
Just for those students
that
are going to stay on after the age of 18.
To 22.
Yeah.
Which are only students who then are on ESA under, what did you say? It's the paragraph 7 subdivision. Well, it goes into the students who have disabilities, essentially.
Okay.
So, so this AEP is specifically targeting those students.
Okay.
Yeah. That's silly. Okay.
Simple. I mean, they're not at grade level. They're not, they, you know, isn't, I mean.
Well, what you could do, and again, this has to be a vote by the council because I don't want it coming from the department.
Okay. Right.
But what you could do is say the same requirements that was required to show for entering the ESA program would then be required to continue on the ESA program past the age of 18. That is something that you can do. So if it is getting a new IEP evaluation before the student turns 18 to continue on the program, that could be one way that the council goes.
Okay, and then that, how would we as parents obtain that? Would you allow it to come from the private school saying, no?
Typically, the IEPs and the METs come from our public school district. So you would still have the same right that you have now to go back at any time to our district of residence or district of attendance and request that IEP or MET if it is expired.
If it is expired. So they would essentially just have to do what you did for the MET. The public school nearest that they're supposed to be in comes and does the MET evaluation, and they decide if this child should go further.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think the MET is a lot easier to get a hold of than an entire IEP from an outside person that doesn't even know your child.
I think because part of the conversation that we were having on the original panel was that an MET is looking at that eligibility criteria and whether or not the child still meets eligibility criteria under ADE. Mm-hmm. However, and IDEA, however, the more challenging piece was the IEP at the time, so now the AEP, because, you know, those the school district, public school district, doesn't really have a lot of access to that student at the time.
Right.
They don't know the student, so then they're gathering information from, you know, only the either the homeschool or the that the private school.
Right. So could we make it a mix of the MET and the IEP that would just simply, how can we make it simple that, you know, you get to the private school or you get to the home and they, if you came to my daughter's private school, she doesn't speak, you know, she can't do 1+1. So, of course, she's going to need the next 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do with a child that's very high functioning? Where do you, you know?
Well, so they would still need to meet the criteria within the ESA program,
mm-hmm.
which is under, it's items I, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this qualified student is identified as having a disability under Section 504.
Okay.
And or they're identified by a school district or by an independent third party, or a child with a disability who's eligible to receive services from a school district under 15763.
Okay.
So they still have to meet that criteria, but then we could require an IEP or MET to be completed to continue on the program until the age of 22.
I think what I'm hearing, though, is the concern that if you're going back to the school where your child hasn't been for a long period of time, you're having a team evaluate your child who
doesn't really know your child.
And I think that's where that independent evaluation team comes into play.
Okay.
So we would have to do an RFP to once we determine the criteria for that independent evaluation team, that might, and it would still be comprised of people, though, that haven't necessarily been with your child the entire time, but it all depends on what you want the criteria for that evaluation team to be.
So would it be a possibility, and this would be just something they have to do once at the age of 18 to continue to 22, would it be a fair thing to maybe have the year prior before they turn 18 to have a check-in every quarter, like a report card, you know, that they're reaching their goals, but not all of them. They could almost like a report card saying that these group of people get to know that child in that last year.
In that whole year before
In that whole 18. Year before they turn 18, is that like way out of question? Only simply because if you're getting a report from the mother who's the homeschooler or the team at the private school that does the IEP, hey, in this first 9 weeks we did such and such, you know, but we would really like to be here. Okay, in the next 9 weeks we did such and such, but we would really like to be here. So that you're getting an idea, even if it's a couple of paragraphs, or getting to know that child a little bit in that year, so that when you do come in and you make this evaluation, you, in the back of your mind, go, okay, not, you know, for my child, you'll see, okay, so she made progress sorting silverware and knows where to put it, but certainly couldn't go, you know, out on her own. Or, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I think what we could do is it wouldn't be required for, you know, necessarily the AEP development plan, but it would, we could put that in our guidance documents in our handbook and say, you know, in that previous year prior to getting the IEP completed for a student that is intending to continue on the plan until after the age of 18, a parent or the facility that the student is at should complete some type of reporting and explain what the child is doing. Mm-hmm. And their improvements, mm-hmm.
or their non improvements.
And
so
yeah.
You're getting maybe a little bit of a view of this child instead of just showing up and going, mm-hmm. oh, well, that child looks like it's fine and doesn't need four more years. Because that's yeah. putting.
I have a question.
I'm not sure what the reasons were behind waiting an MET for a child once they get into the program, the ESA program. But could it be as simple as saying for children that come in through an MET and are served under special education programs, whatever they might be, home or private, that they are eligible to stay until the age of 22? I mean, could it be that simple? I don't know what the thought process was or what the meetings were or what the conversations were about, because we used to have to get an MET and then it was waived. So I'm wondering if there's some reason that we could use the same argument for waiving the MET to begin with, we could waive it for kids that are being served under special education.
So just to kind of clarify, the MET isn't necessarily waived. It's just once a student is on the program, once they've provided documentation to show that they are eligible under those categories for students with disabilities, then we just no longer require additional documentation to stay on until they're 18, if that makes sense. So it's not necessarily that it's waived, it's just once you've shown us that they have that need, we don't need to continue confirming that you have that need.
And in statute,
okay,
under 1457, it does require that an independent evaluation team provide an annual education plan pursuant to, another evaluation
right.
in order to go until 22. But with that said,
trying to figure out a way to make it simple.
Yeah, no, and we agree in, you know, just the internal conversations that we
had. I mean, I never did understand why you could waive it, you know, and then just stay in because kids change, you know, so somebody who goes in at second grade, you know, they might look different, you know, in their freshman year, but they get funded at the exact same level regardless of how they're doing or what things have been resolved or not resolved. And so I just was thinking maybe there was a way to take the same arguments and the same thought process, and maybe that would help us towards resolving it. So, but if we still have to do some sort of an evaluation, then that brings us back to what the criteria are.
So just to kind of clarify on that for you, a child who actually has come into the program, and if there is a change in their need and a change, you could always go back to the school, have them reevaluated, and if there was a change, that is something you can submit to the department, and we can make that change in funding throughout the program. So just to clarify that for you, it doesn't negate that we
need... I understand that, but I doubt that anybody's ever going to go back and say, my child needs less now. That's what I'm trying to say, is that it's not really an accurate picture of a person at, you know, kindergarten or preschool that goes in, and as they grow up, things might change.
Right.
And unless the parent decides to go back to the school and get the MET to show that they need fewer services, I mean, that's just not really realistic. That's not going to happen.
Right.
So I know if they need more, obviously you're going to go back and get a reevaluation and you're going to get more. So I just was thinking maybe there's something in that, in those meetings and that, in the reasoning that maybe we could use here, but it sounds like maybe not.
Yeah, I think it may be the opposite of you just want to make sure that a student that is entering or will be turning 18 still needs the required services. So maybe the inverse of what you're talking about.
Right.
But yeah, with that said, I think the department is probably agreeing with each of you and that you want to make sure this process is as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing, and I don't know, make sure that I'm explaining this clearly. So what we're thinking is prior to the student turning 18, maybe put into the guidance document, not into the requirements for the IEP or the MET, but require a parent who is looking to continue on the ESA program past the age of 18 to provide some information. If they're homeschooled, provide, the parent would provide information, or we would determine who would be the appropriate person to provide some progress or non-progress made, just really updates on the student entering or upon the turning 18. Then at the age of 18, and when they have to receive the annual education plan, we would look at either the MET or the IEP process and also look to establishing the qualifications of the independent evaluation teams that could then come up with those plans. Is that kind of where everyone's at?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And then also, I think, was there still an open question of how those evaluations are funded? Because I know that there was some conversation about the parents using their card to just swipe for that outside evaluation.
Yeah, the ESA money would be used, so the parent would have to spend their ESA money to support the IEP teams and their evaluation or their independent evaluation teams.
And let me see. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And then another quick question as far as like the eligibility criteria, back to having the parent maybe come in a year or so before the child turns 18 mm-hmm. to have like a preliminary meeting. At that time, wouldn't it be appropriate to kind of mirror what we do in the public schools, just to look at eligibility or eligibility criteria for graduation? So really at that IEP, we always look at where are they in regard to eligibility for graduation criteria, and then what is it that we can change for that child? If they're not going to meet the standard eligibility criteria to graduate, we put in a different plan. So, you know, this is what we want this child to do in order to graduate, and this is what we think in order to be successful in society, this is what we, the skills that we want them to have. And at that point, wouldn't that kind of give the team a little bit more guidance as far as where they're at, what they need, and then maybe even the level of progress the child's able to make within that next year? Is that something we can consider?
Before ADE gives their feedback, does anyone else from the council have feedback on that?
I think that that makes sense.
I would agree with that.
I do.
Does that make sense?
It seems like, and it'd be helpful. And I know that, is it Kelly? No, not Kelly. I'm having a hard time keeping everybody straight here.
Andrea?
Alicia.
Yes. It would be helpful, I think, to try to mirror what is happening in the schools, but I felt like when we were going through all the whole process of this, that the schools were really reluctant to be part of it. And I know you can make them do it. Obviously, you can't, you know, you can't just do something because somebody's reluctant. You can't just ask them not to do it. But the other thing is that the parents seemed like they were concerned about the cost of these. Some of these evaluations are just, you know, really incredible, and that's part of what the school was saying too, is that if we need to go back and reevaluate this child, and I think somebody else already touched on this, you know, we haven't seen them for, you know, 6 years or 8 years or whatever, it just seems like maybe those things are going to be difficult in reality, because sometimes what we put down on paper, it sounds great on paper, but then when we try to implement it, it seems like there just seem like there's some difficulties. And even though schools are supposed to do things, many of us have opted out of going to public school because schools don't do things. And so then you get into this big, you know, kind of fight, and if you've, you know, maybe left the school district under not the best circumstances, then, you know, how do you get these evaluations? And if you go outside the school, you know, how much does it cost? And so even though it sounds good because you're trying to evaluate the child and what their needs are, I'm just wondering what the reality might be like.
And is it possible to use the IEP that your child's working under in the private school? And another question, do the homeschooled parents, are they paying for those evaluations out on their own to follow the criteria for their homeschool kids? Because if you're getting these IEPs, could you use the ones that you're getting through your private school from your, you know, your behavioral analyst that you're paying with your ESA funded money?
I mean, just want to make sure that we're not sucking down all the ESA money just to pay for an evaluation, because those things can cost, you know, quite a bit of money. And, you know, parents are trying to budget so that their children have the best education possible. Sometimes the private school takes most of their ESA money. You know, they might not. It's great to say that ESA can pay for those evaluations, but if the evaluations are exorbitant, then it's kind of fought between, okay, well, if I paid for those evaluations showing that my child can continue past the age of 18, I won't have enough money to enroll them in the school so they can continue past the age of 18. So it seems like there was some kind of that, making sure that these costs, I don't know, you can't really control a cost, but maybe to ask for the least amount of information necessary so that the evaluations are not an exorbitant time or cost.
So one thing that we were just thinking of, you know, we definitely understand the concerns of having to go back to the district to get the IEP or the MET, but we are required as a council to develop a request for proposals for the independent evaluation teams. So when we develop an RFP, which an RFP allows us to go out and receive bids from independent vendors or persons or individuals, mm-hmm. and they would identify how they meet the criteria that this council is setting out for meeting the requirements of the independent evaluation team. And in there you can have provisions on cost. So what we could do is we could have kind of a tiered system. So for an independent evaluation team, we could define it as those that respond to the RFP and are awarded under the RFP, and or those that those IEP teams at a public school. So then it gives the parent the option to do one or the other.
That's a good idea. That'll work, I would think. So that basically gives the parents who have a very contentious relationship with their home school district to the opportunity to look at some of these other outside vendors, basically. So it's similar to like an IEE.
Correct.
So it's nice to give the parent, I mean, I'm not a parent currently with a child on an ESA, but I mean, as a parent, I would think that would be a good option to have, you know, to be able to either save the money and go through the school district or
spend the
have the
money's
available
your
to consider an IEE. Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't take, so then...
Someone is waiting to get into the meeting. To let them in and allow anyone into the meeting, please press *8.
People, you know, what that's like and how much...
Okay, now anyone who tries to join will be allowed into the meeting. To undo this, lock the meeting.
To kind of control costs through that RFP, I can't remember. I'm trying to pay attention.
I'm sorry. You just momentarily cut out. Can you go back over what you just were talking about? I'm sorry. We're having some technical difficulties.
Oh, okay. So are you talking to Corinne or Alicia?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's all right. I think Alicia was saying that sounded like a really good way for parents to be able to choose, you know, if it doesn't work out and they don't feel comfortable going back to the district, but then they could go, like she said, it was something called an IEE, an independent evaluation.
Use that outside team, yes.
Right. And I was just saying, I don't know anything about that because I've never done it. It would be interesting to be able to know how much those things generally cost, you know, what the process is like. I'm sure it depends on what end result you're trying to get, which is what we are trying to define. Mm-hmm. But then I just asked, I can't remember if somebody said there was a way through the IFP to help control a cost, or if it's just whatever the vendors, you know, come up with. I don't know if there's any chance to influence cost. I don't know, 10 teams, like, it might not be a good idea in some ways, but that was my question.
Would it only have to be done that one time, 18, and then you would have your next? So it seems like if you know that this cost is coming up, you you'll take it from any independent. Well, who are you gonna? And we decide who we accept it from.
Well, we're deciding. The purpose of this committee is to decide the criteria for that independent evaluation team. Then we will do an RFP, which is to go out and see who can provide these services based on that criteria.
Okay.
And then we'll have like an approved list essentially of people that you can go to. So parents won't have to go find someone.
Right.
You will just have a list to select from.
Okay.
You select and then you go to that person and get your AEP done, mm-hmm. which is different than your IEP or MNT, okay. or go that route if you don't want to pay for it.
You go the public school system like the way you've got your MUT or your...
Okay. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That makes perfectly good sense.
And then through the RFP, we can put like a not to exceed a certain dollar amount for these evaluations?
Usually, what we could do is we could say like a reasonable amount would be around X, Y, and Z, and like put that amount in there. And then this council is actually going to be the body that would be approving those independent parties to be on that approved list for independent evaluation teams. So that could be one of the criteria mm-hmm. that this council looks at. They can look at the cost mechanism or processes in place of that vendor currently, or person, or whoever this person is that is responding, has in place. So if you look at it and you say, based on the services that respondent one is providing as opposed to respondent two, respondent one is much more expensive than respondent two, mm-hmm. we're going to choose respondent two.
Okay.
And that is a consistent practice with all of our other RFPs. It's not just with what we would be doing for this.
I'm sorry? We're talking about something for an entire state, right? The entire state of Arizona. So I'm going to guess that there would be, you know, more people responding to an RFP to do these kinds of evaluations in, say, like the Phoenix area. And, you know, maybe some of these people that are in more rural or remote areas, you know, is it even an option to be able to do something, you know, electronically through a Skype evaluation, or would they have to come in person? Or if you just have one person, like in, you know, Prescott or something, that's your only option. Well, I guess besides your school district, but I'm trying to think big picture instead of just, you know, sometimes we think, oh yeah, there's lots of resources within a community, but sometimes, you know, there aren't.
That's a good point.
I don't want to speak for the council, but I think that it would be up to the parent to look through the approved list to see which respondent meets their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you notice that if you're in a rural community, you may not want to choose a vendor or a respondent that is solely based in Maricopa County that doesn't have a virtual system to do the independent evaluation.
And then, I mean, the other option is that they could, if the school mm-hmm. is closer, simply go back to their school. Yeah.
Sure.
I think a question to pose is whether or not
and I don't know, but that's why I'm posing it, is whether or not an evaluation via Skype or, you know, electronically, we would probably maybe then want to determine what is an acceptable way to do that to make sure that the evaluation is going to actually be a good evaluation of that child. Because if you're just talking to them on the phone, is that enough to really know about a child? If we're saying that you really need to have reports for a year to kind of prepare, you know, is just one digital interaction enough? So I think that's something to consider as we, you know, if that's a route we want to go.
Because it really does matter. It depends on what you're looking to do at that time. Because if, you know, a child has multiple disabilities, that probably isn't going to change. You know, more than likely they're still going to qualify for having multiple disabilities. And you, at that point, you really could just do a review. You wouldn't necessarily have to do any sort of in-person assessment. But if the child has, a learning disability or another health impairment, you know, those things do change. So I think it would just be, you know, it would be up to the each individual child at the time and each individual family as far as what it is that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
But I think we do need to keep in mind technology. It's extremely powerful. A lot happens with technology now. You can do, you know, FaceTime. A lot can be seen through a camera. If you have other documentation, I just want to make sure that we don't rule it out and at least try to keep it in mind as we go forward, because it is definitely something that can help families.
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's plenty of rating scales and things like that are just, you know, forms that parents fill out and the teachers fill out and things like that, that those can be done long distance, no problem. Over anymore, you just get a link and you fill it out online and it just automatically shoots it back to the school district or the evaluator. So a lot of things like that are easy. It's a little bit harder to do like a cognitive evaluation via Skype or anything like that. You can't really, there isn't anything that I know of that's really extremely valid for that. But there's most kids at 18 may not need a new cognitive evaluation necessarily. I'm sure that they probably have had that done throughout the years. I'm more concerned about like the kids that you guys are talking about are initially, you've got your kiddo that was in preschool that qualified based on a preschool evaluation and then they haven't had anything since. Those kids, you're probably going to need a full re-eval on. So we'll have to figure it out for those kids for sure. Because they will have to
the other thing that comes up was that when my son turned, pretty sure it was 18. I can go back and double check, but you know, to do the to be eligible for Social Security, to be insurance. You know, that's it's a separate account that is managed by Social Security. You know, there's a long process that you have to go through, and one of the things is a cognitive evaluation. You know, my son could not really participate in that, which made the evaluator's job very easy, but. You know, that's if you can manage that as a parent, that would be another piece of information that could be added to this report. You know, to Department of Ed to be able to show more information, and you wouldn't be paying out of pocket for that, obviously, because it's something that you've already done.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Would be another thing that might be helpful for parents.
Absolutely. Well, it's always something that's considered within any evaluation, anyways. Is that any sort of outside report?
And if you have guardianship, then you've gone through even more. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a letter from the doctor. So some of these documents that are, you know, obtained for other reasons might be helpful for this as well. I know it has to be done every year. So I guess that may be something to think about too. Is how many of those, you know, things could you get again the next time or something if you needed to? But those are all documents that we already fill out as parents, and it might be helpful to be able to use those in this evaluation as well.
Yep. Great. Great thought. Okay. All right. So what are our next steps as far as like are we dividing up some of this into sections where we'll maybe put like a plan in place, or is this something that we're going to have conversations for each individual piece of this plan where we make a determination as a team?
Well,
Yeah, I think we're going to have to break it out.
Because we first need to decide. I think we're going to have to break it out. I agree with that. Because we still need to decide then what is the criteria specifically for that child once they have this AEP, what is it that they're looking at to determine that they can stay on until the age of 22? Because we haven't really nailed that down. So what is it which children can actually stay on? And then we have to still determine also what then the evaluation team, so who these evaluators are and what is the credentials that we want them to have. And then what documentation do they need? It sounds like from this that we might want to have them collect documentation similar to our IEP MET process where you bring in all those outside things. Possibly that, you know, additional year of reporting that the parent's doing on top of that and that your school's doing, maybe your team from the school, I don't know. You know, what documentation you want them to have to be able to even make that decision, and then what documentation, what their AEP process is actually going to look like, so what documentation they're going to give to us. So we still have to decide on all that criteria. So I think it might be best to break out one conversation at a time, possibly.
Yeah. Okay, so we
there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we tentatively have scheduled...
The next meeting is already scheduled for November 8th from 10 to 12, and we have two tentative dates beyond that, November 15th and November 29th.
So for the...
Same times.
So for the next meeting, do you want to just talk about the criteria to continue on from beyond age 18?
That'd be great.
Okay.
So everybody kind of just do their own research as far as what they feel that the criteria should be. And maybe, like, I'm thinking I can bring what the public schools look at for a child who is still in school, and when making that determination as to whether or not they continue in public school past the age of 18, we can look at that as a consideration.
Yes.
And just bring that data. Mm-hmm. And then is that what we're kind of looking at doing?
Yep. Yes.
And, you know, after we put all this together, it looks like when I'm looking at the bill here, it says that the results of the evaluation will be given to the parent of the qualified and to the department on or before they have July 31st. The department determines that the qualified student meets the eligibility criteria prescribed in the annual education plan. So it kind of sounds like, I don't know, it kind of sounds like it's circular.
Yeah, so the department...
You know, like, we define the criteria, and then you decide if the criteria are met.
No, okay,
is that
so,
right?
Yeah, so essentially it's going to work very similar to how applications are submitted now. So when an application is submitted, and for any criteria, for any eligibility category, we review that just to make sure, okay, they meet that. So whatever we decide that the result should be of this AEP, this is the criteria for actually continuing on. So say a child goes and does an AEP, but the independent evaluator says you could have this scenario, possibly not, but you could. And then that independent evaluation says, no, this child does not meet the criteria we've defined. Right, because you could have any parent exercise this and want to do it, but that doesn't mean that the child will actually meet it. So what we'll be looking for is, in that AEP, yes, this child can continue on, or no, this child cannot. We're just confirming that the results of the AEP are to allow them to continue, and then we allow that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that we, as a committee, are defining what that criteria is to allow them to continue.
Yes,
it's not like you, as the Department of Education, have already had your criteria set up for how this is supposed to work.
No.
You just have to be comfortable with it as part of the committee.
Yeah.
We're all going to agree. In fact, if you already have something that you have to meet that's separate from the committee that you're going to be looking at, I guess
The only thing that the department would be looking at separate from the criteria would be what's specified in statute. They have to be a qualified student. So that's the I, double I, and triple I.
So if you came onto the ESA program under the eligibility of a student with a disability, then you would meet that. So we'll check to make sure it's that, and we'll check to make sure that the AEP says that, yes, you can continue on based on the criteria that this committee...
So we're deciding the criteria.
Yeah,
yes.
Beyond being a qualified
student. Okay, exactly. I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
So now we need to do our due diligence on what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to decide on the 8th.
On the 8th. Mm-hmm.
Which is next Tuesday. Amen. Okay. Okay, and what, and I guess what it, and what it would be for families that are going to have to be doing this, and what makes sense for them. Okay. All right.
Okay. And it sounds like it might break out to kids that are, what I would say, quote unquote, more obvious. Maybe like Andrea, child, my child. You know, our kids are qualifying under, I think somebody said before, multiple disabilities. You know, you've got, like in my child's case, cognitive disability, speech language disability, hearing loss. Yeah, that's not going to change, you know, and so maybe there's some way to kind of do a filter or something, and maybe some more obvious things. And then, as I think somebody else pointed out, or maybe Andrea did, you know, what about the children that are, you know, have fewer challenges, and how do we determine that? And then there's probably going to be the obvious thing on the other end of the spectrum, as I think, I'm looking at my paper, I don't see, but anyway, but somebody said, you know, people that obviously don't qualify because they didn't come in under special ed, you know, they didn't come in under a disability. So maybe there's this continuum kind of, and Alicia can help us because she's at the school, so she understands some of those nuances.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Great. Yep. Because there is, even when you're looking at, when we're looking for the, or even before we're sending out an RFP, we can maybe even streamline some of that and just say, because there's a difference between like a red MET meeting, which is what we call them. Every district kind of has their own acronyms, but when you're reviewing the existing data, sometimes you get to the point where you review all the data and you say, you know what, there's enough data that exists here to just continue eligibility. And then sometimes you review the data and you say, you know what, we need to collect additional data, and that's when you do additional testing. So, you know, as I do contracts on the outside of schools as well, and when I do a red eligibility, that costs significantly less money. I do not charge nearly as much as I do for actually having to do the testing and the write-up and all of that. So, you know, there are some criteria out there for that.
Excellent.
That's excellent. That's really good.
So that would be more in the qualifications for the, what would be the, what we put in the RFP? The tiered mentality. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So like a tiered.
Oh. Yeah. Tiered review. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So with that, I believe that is all that we had on our agenda for today.
Okay.
We do have a call to the public, so if anyone would, if you'd like to speak. Okay. So the next meetings, like we said previously, is November 8th at 10 o'clock, November 15th at 10, and November 29th at 10 o'clock as well.
Okay.
Okay.
Those calendar invites have already been sent out, so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So for those meetings, is it, are we going to be using the Silverlight or the Microsoft link?
No, we'll make sure to send you all the documentation beforehand via email.
Yeah, we can attach it to the calendar invite as the items come in before the meeting date. So it's
great.
All on your calendar invite.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you, because I don't know if I'll get IT out here to meet up before next week. So.
No.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So if anyone has research that they would like to share with the group beforehand, just send it our way before the 8th, and then we'll send a calendar, we'll send an email letting them know an update has been made to the calendar invite, which includes data to review before the meeting.
Okay, mm-hmm. Awesome.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. And with that, our meeting is adjourned. It's 11.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.